Shalom Aleichem, this is Rabbi Kovacs for Shabbat Vayera. The Mishnah Yomi is learning Ketuvot, Chapter 4, Mishnah 6. Ha'av Eino Chayev B'mizonot Bito. A father is not truly required to feed his daughter. Now, as we've explained, our ancient rabbis, our sages, they said, yeah, he really needs to. And the Gemara explains that up to the age of 6 or 7, everyone agrees that the father has a biblical obligation to support his young children, not just the girls, the boys as well. But once they're old enough to sort of, you know, contribute to their own support, then technically the father is off the hook. But of course, he would be under tremendous social pressure to actually feed his children. The Rambam writes that if a father was stingy with his children, he could be subject to, repercussions. Not, he won't get an aliyah and shul. He could get banned by the local community. They would call him worse than a raven. A raven's not even a kosher bird. At least it feeds its own children. So even when there isn't a biblical obligation, it's just a good thing. Our sages did push very strongly in that direction. As long as the parents are able to support their children, you know, maybe keep them on the insurance plan, things like that would be a kiyum in this time. The Chafetz Chaim, you know, much more recently wrote that in terms of paying for education, that it might be even more vital for parents to send their daughters to a Jewish school so they wouldn't have to go to the public schools of the time or of our time too. There's issues. Even more important than sending the boys to yeshiva might be to send the girls to a Jewish school. That's the Chafetz Chaim. So of course, it's a good idea. Our mission is speaking on a technical level, and it explains, Zay Midrash, this is a drusha, an exposition, Darish Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah came up with, Lifnei Chachamim b'Kerem b'Yavna, when he was in front of the academy in Kerem b'Yavna, one of the places that the Sanhedrin went after the destruction of Yerushalayim. He said, Habonim Yirshu, he said, sons inherit, the habanot yizonu, and daughters get fed. Now, what he's talking about is two stipulations that were written into every ketuvah, every marriage contract. And the first stipulation is the sons from this specific wife. Recall that a man could have had more than one wife. So it's the sons from this wife will inherit her ketuvah money or property after the father, her husband, passes away. And he compares that to the other Tanai, the other condition, habanot, any daughters will be provided for. We get food and clothing and shelter, obviously. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says these conditions follow similar guidelines. Ma banim, just like by the sons, einan yorshin, they don't inherit the ketuvah properties of their own mother, eila la'achar mita ta'av, unless their father passes away. Afa bonot, so to the daughters, einan nizonot, eila la'achar mita tavihen. They don't have a real obligation to be fed unless the father passes away. Of course, as we've explained, rabbinically, our sages put tremendous pressure on parents to feed and support and educate their children, which Baruch Hashem continues to this day. Thank God the Jewish people of the book, were very invested in education of the next generation. But on a purely technical level, the father's estate would certainly feed all of the daughters after the father passes away. But during his lifetime, he's not technically obligated. Now let's go on to Mishnah Zion. Lo katav la ketuvah. A husband did not write a ketuvah for the wife. Even though this has since become the absolutely universal custom and requirement. But what happens if this marriage ends without a written document? Betula, if she was married as a betula, gova metaim, she collects 200 zuz, the almana mana. If she had already been a widow, had a prior relationship, then she gets 100 zuz from her husband here. Bibnei shehu tanai beitin, because these matters are a condition stipulated by the court. So in effect, a Jewish marriage operates under the legal assumption that the Jewish court has these automatic stipulations that apply to every marriage, even if they're not written down in a document. We actually recognize this fact during the Jewish marriage ceremony when the Kiddushin is done. He says, Harei ad mekudeshet li kedat Moshe v'Yisrael, in accordance to the law of Moses and Israel. So basically, the whole marriage is under the legal framework that the Torah and her sages have set up for a Jewish marriage. Now, the Mishnah goes on with a variation. Kotav law, he did write her a ketuvah, but he wrote her sode shave mana. He wrote her a field that she would get this specific field, and it was worth 100 tachat metayim zuz. And she would normally be entitled to 200 zuz as a ketuvah, but he wrote her in the document a field worth only 100. Or a similar case, velo kotav law, he didn't write her in the ketuvah, he didn't write this language. Kol nichsim de'it li, all properties I have, achrayin liketuvatich, are subject, are leaned to the ketuvah money, chayiv. In both cases, the husband is chayiv to give her the value of 200, and even from the shirt off his back is the language of the ketuvah, from any property he has, whether it's real estate, land, or movable properties, shehu tanai beitin, that these are stipulations the court makes on a Jewish marriage, even if they're not written into the document. Good Shabbos, Shabbat Shalom.